We're pleased to have in our pulpit this morning Roger Smith, member of our congregation and cheerleader extraordinaire.
I feel naked up here without my Superman costume on, for those that had the pleasure of seeing me in that. I want to thank you all for coming out here this morning to hear me. Obviously, you didn't read that I was talking, so you showed up anyway, despite the ice. There are two things in my life that I think are pretty constant, and that is, one, I am perpetually a student and maybe perpetually a teacher, or I like to be. I've realized a long time ago, the more I learn, the less I know, so most of you are familiar with that saying. Oh, the worst tragedy in life is not to die young, but to have lived till I'm 75 years old, and yet to have truly never lived. That's a quote from Martin Luther King Jr. We recently celebrated his birthday. I was tempted when I was going to give this talk today, or was asked to give this talk today, to title my sermon, Dare to Dream, after Martin Luther King Jr.'s famous talk. But then I thought about that for a moment, and I don't think I really wanted my oratory skills to be compared to Martin Luther King Jr.'s. Instead, I stole the title, because I learned a long time ago it's better to steal something if you can, instead of reinventing it. Dare to Win was a title. Dare to Win is the title of a book that was written years ago by a gentleman by the name of Mark Victor Hansen. How many here have ever heard of Mark Victor Hansen? Okay. You haven't. What you have heard of, though, is his books. I guarantee that. Not Dare to Win, because it wasn't really that popular. But you've heard of the Chicken Soup for the Soul books? Chicken Soup for the Soul 1, Chicken Soup for the Soul 2, 3, 4, Sister Soul, Daughter Soul, Teenage Soul, Mother Soul, Pregnant Soul, you know, on and on. What a successful series. I actually had the pleasure of hearing Mark Victor Hansen speak many years ago when he spoke to the Maryland Chiropractic Association. I was president of the organization at that time, and he spoke to one of our conventions down in Ocean City, Maryland. And I spoke to him afterwards. I was impressed not because he was a tremendous motivational speaker, because his book Dare to Win was a great book, a great literary work. I was impressed more so by the fact that I looked at this man, and you could see it in his eyes, and you could hear it in his voice, that he believed in himself. And he believed he was great at what he was doing. Now, I had heard some of the wonderful motivational speakers. There's a gentleman from Pennsylvania by the name of Charles Tremendous Jones. He always liked to kick things in the air. Charles Tremendous Jones. And Zig Ziglar. Oh, the great. I've heard them both live. They were wonderful. Mark Victor Hansen was not. Don't tell him that if you ever meet him. I was impressed more with Mark Victor Hansen years later when he came out with the first Chicken Soup for the Soul book, before the whole series went. And they are wonderful books if you haven't read them. They're great inspirational stories. I do like them. I'm not making fun of them at all. But I was impressed because Mark Victor Hansen coupled with someone by the name of Jack Canfield to write those books. What maybe he realized was that maybe he realized he wasn't a great writer. Maybe he even realized he wasn't a great speaker. But he knew this is what he wanted to do. So he stayed focused on his task until he found this combination and realized he didn't even have to be a great writer. He took stories that other people had given him, mixed in a little bit of famous quotations from people throughout history, and ta-da! A successful series. An incredibly successful series. Maryland Chiropractic Association, with all of their members that have probably doubled since I was president, couldn't afford to get him to speak now. I heard him when he was nothing. Dare to Win. I chose that title because I associate winning with success and success with happiness. Now, that doesn't mean that they're all intertwined, but I mean, that's how I think of things, and I think a lot of us do. And I chose the title Dare, it started off with that, because I really think to win, to be successful and to be happy, lots of times we have to be courageous. We have to be courageous. And that's not the only thing to win to be successful. I think that sometimes we have to be persistent. We have to be... there's persistence, there's consistency, there's perseverance, you know, there's courage. All these things tie in. And I think also just a great deal of hard work. Those are big, important things. Now, what you didn't hear me say, much to the chagrin of a Unitarian Universalist congregation, you probably didn't hear me use the words knowledge or intelligence. Not that I belie the importance of those, but I'll tell you, I've met a lot of successful people, a lot of CEOs, that to be politically correct, I might say were actually cognitively challenged. Now, we all like to think of ourselves as intelligent, rational beings that gather the appropriate data and formulate intelligent thinking processes about anything before we make a decision. That's why we're here. Because here we're allowed to think in this congregation, in this building. I'm not going to tell any of you what to think. Believe me, I've been in committees. I don't want to tell any of you what to think. Trust me. We all have our own thoughts. And that's the joy of being here. But despite all that, the reality of it is, and many times there's other things that come in play, there's emotion. Does anybody want here know, and if you're here at the 9 a.m. service, if any of those five people have showed up again, does anybody know what the number one reason, excuse me if I sound sexist because I'm going to get both genders here, but the number one reason women buy automobiles, the number one factor, does anybody know?
They're cute.
Color. I heard it. The number one reason. It's not because of the repair ratings. It's not what Consumer Reports said about them. It's not because of manufacturer. It's because of color. That's the number one reason. Well, let me switch genders for a second. Men, male CEOs, not female CEOs, because it's different, but male CEOs. Do you know the number one reason that they give for promoting someone or hiring somebody in their business? Thank you. No, I'm just teasing. You're not far off. We hear about different things. Someone said height, and height, these things come into factor. Good looks come into factor. We vote for people for these reasons, believe it or not. But the number one reason that CEOs will say they hired someone or promoted someone is because they said, I just had a good feeling about that person. Women CEOs are different. They'll look at their record. They'll want to see what their proven track record was, and they'll want to see what the credentials are. Much more closely, much more analytically. But the male CEOs work more in a gut. Women buy cars by color, and men promote and hire quite often because they have a good gut feeling about somebody. Not that the other factors aren't important. This probably is, you know, pretty disappointing to a lot of you people that are out there. You've all thought getting those great educations. We've got doctors, we've got lawyers, we've got business people out here that feel that education is important. I don't put that aside. That's obviously important for success in a lot of areas of our lives. But we're combined by many different things to get successful and to get winning. Now, I memorized my first quote, but my mind isn't always that good, so I wanted to make sure I got these quotes correct. I want to share another one with you. Does anybody know who William James is? Kind of the father of modern psychology. Here's a quote from him. The greatest discovery of my generation is that human beings can alter their lives by altering their attitudes of mind. By altering their attitudes of mind. It's not something that we can read in a book necessarily. It's not something someone can really even teach us. Now, following along with that, there's another quote similar that I like by a former TV personality, news anchorman, special news show host by the name of Hugh Downs that most of you know. And Hugh Downs put it this way. A happy person is not a person with a certain set of circumstances, but rather a person with a certain set of attitudes. So, we've got a number of factors. We've got attitude, we've got perseverance, determination, courage, all these things that help us to get successful. One of my favorite authors is a gentleman by the name of Stephen Covey. Now, have most of you heard of Stephen Covey? Familiar with some of his works? Stephen Covey's most famous book, I believe, is his Seven Habits of Highly Effective People. And in that book, Seven Habits of Highly Effective People, Stephen Covey begins by having people develop their personal mission statement. Has anybody here ever really written a personal mission statement? Not too many. Many of us have been involved with companies or businesses where we do vision statements. And we do, before we do the vision statement, we do the mission. What's the mission of our business? What are we really there for? And then our vision, how do we see ourselves? We've done some of that with the congregation here. But for a personal mission statement, the first thing that's most important, forgive me, I've got to find my pens here, or a pen at least that writes. In a personal mission statement, we have to get in touch with our core values. And I'll tell you right now, many of us lead our lives based upon fallacies or misconceptions or deception to ourselves. I really believe so, because most of us spend a lot of our time really not being so happy or content with things, some aspect of our lives. Doesn't mean we're not happy people, we don't see joy, but we find ourselves stressed a lot. Anybody here ever experienced any stress? I have two teenage kids. I'll tell you, stress. But we've got stress. We also feel sometimes our time is fruitless or we're not getting things accomplished. We get frustrated. All these things can happen because of the fact that we're acting and interacting every day without being true to our principles or our core values. So let me just ask you out there, and think for a minute. Now, this is something I really want to challenge you to do this at home later. I was going to have people do it here, but it definitely will take too much time. But just quickly, I want to come up with some core values. And the thing is, you need to do this at home and write it down. Because most of us think, if I asked anybody here, what are your core values, you'd probably all be able to come up with at least a couple things pretty quickly. But stop and think about it. And understand this isn't written in stone. You can change these. You can come back and modify them over time. But there's a saying and a very hard lesson I learned years ago that lawyers will tell you, and it has to do with contracts. And that is, quite simply, if it isn't written, it doesn't exist. When you write down your core values and take just a few minutes, 5, 10, 15 minutes, whatever it takes, to get in touch with what's real, what do I really find important? And to me, important is, it's individual. It's what brings you joy, it's what brings you happiness, it's what gives you a sense of purpose in being. And most of us, more than anything else, want to have a sense of purpose. That's what brings us joy. So whatever that is, write those things down. Because it's like doing a contract with yourself. Putting it down is more tangible. So give me some ideas of what's a core value.
Compassion.
Compassion. That's a great one. Compassion. Pardon me? Patience.
Generosity.
Helping people. Oh, that's silly. See what I did there? Sense. Forgive me. Apparently you're not allowed to kneel in a Unitarian church. No, sense of humor. What was the last one I heard? Optimism. Truthfulness. I'm sorry. Truthfulness. Or truthiness. Or toothfulness if you're a dentist.
Empathy.
Forgiveness. Is that what I heard? I tell you, we've got a pretty good list there. You guys are great. I'll tell you, it's a lot more active when you've got more than five people here. Reverend Bob was messing with my head. He said, your 9 o'clock service is usually going to be your biggest one, Raj. Boy, was I nervous with only five people. Forgiveness. And if you really think about it, there's other things that we might include there. Some of them are the principles maybe we even, and I'm not trying to push it upon you, but when you really think about it, being stewards of the earth, the interconnected web of all life, how do we tie that into, how's that part of our core values? These are things that I think are essential to all of us. when we talk about core values, we're talking about the essence of our being. Things that resonate within us so deeply that give us a sense of passion and drive to pursue and achieve whatever it is we want to. What happens is we get away from this stuff a lot. I mean, is money a core value for anybody here? Making money is a core value? All right. I appreciate your honesty, Tibby. And I'll tell you something. I would be willing to challenge the rest of you because money sounds evil. Money is superficial. It's the ultimate material thing. But I'll bet you in reality, money is a core value for every one of you. Well, we live in a society that's based upon money. So, right, if we don't have money, it is stressful. Extremely stressful. But what is money? And this is something that it takes it to the next level. Tying in your core values with what it is you're doing. If you can make that connection, I mean, if you're the breadwinner, the primary breadwinner in your home, do you need to make that money? Yes, but why do you need to make it? You need it to have the home that you want to live in. Maybe because one of your core values is making a difference in the world. If you make money, you can give to generously do that. Maybe one day you can make enough money that you can retire. And when you're retired, you can be like some of the people that are in this congregation that I see that are here on every committee and working every day, every Sunday, every evening, every weekend, almost doing things, volunteering the time, because this is important, to be able to spread the opportunity to have a congregation like this available to them. So whatever it is, and money ties into that, and it does. It absolutely does. But you have to make that connection. If you make that connection and you can bring the joy as to what's the real reason I'm doing this, and you keep that in mind, it's going to make everything you do happier. Now, Stephen Covey also in his book talks very much about the quadrants, the four quadrants of activity. Now, most of you probably can't read these side ones here. Hopefully you can read the top ones. But I'm going to go through them real quickly because I don't want to get us running too late. Quadrant one is urgent and important. Whew, I got an exclamation mark there. Urgent and important. Quadrant two is also important, right? It comes across, but it's not urgent. Not urgent. So not urgent. I gave it a smiley face because things that aren't urgent aren't as stressful. Quadrant three is urgent and non-important. Urgent, but it's not really important. And quadrant four is non-urgent and non-important. Who can tell me out there, does anybody know where most people spend the majority of their time? Three? Four? Four? You're in trouble. You are in trouble. Not you. No, it's your husband, right? It's your neighbor. Is anybody, who knows?
One.
One? Someone said three? Three? One and two? I'll tell you what studies have shown, and I know you can't really see this over there, so I'm going to give you a glance. So, you know, like in the, I'll be like if they do in the round three fights, so everybody can see our chart. So you know what it looks like. The majority of people spend their time in quadrant one and quadrant three. And why is that? Because it's urgent. If you've got a baby crying, you've got to tend to that baby's needs. If the phone's ringing, sometimes you've got to answer that phone right away. If you've got a meeting that your boss said you've got to get to that meeting. If you've got taxes that are due today or a bill that's due tomorrow, you've got to pay that bill. You've got to get that done. Those things are urgent and important. Most of those are urgent and important. Answering the phone might be urgent but not important. But, I mean, these are things that press us every day. That's where we spend the majority of our time. And you know what quadrant one is? I could also rename quadrant one as a word that begins with S. Urgent, it's important. Quadrant three is urgent, but it's not as important, so it's not as bad. But we get burnt out in quadrant one and quadrant three, so where do we go to? Right to quadrant four. It's not urgent, it's not important. I'm just going to veg. I'm going to check my email for a few hours. Facebook. I'm going to watch this TV show on reruns for the 14th time. Who knows the old expression? If you want to open your mind, open a book. You want to turn off your mind, turn on the TV. That's what happens to most of us. Now, Stephen Covey spoke all around the world. And he spoke all around the world to just a tremendous group of people. And lots of times after his speeches, people would come up to him. And I'll tell you what I'm doing right now. I know I can speak fast, so forgive me if any of you aren't hearing everything I'm saying. But what I'm doing is I'm condensing a 16-week college course into a 20-minute, you know, presentation. So I might be leaving a few things out. You're willing to talk to me afterwards if you have any questions. But Stephen Covey, when he spoke all around the world, would have people come up to him and say, what can I do to make my life more successful, to be happier, to have less stress? You know what he would tell them? Strive to spend more time in quadrant two. What fits into quadrant two? I'll give you a real quick example. How many of you, and we all talk about planning, how many people are good at writing a list of what they want to get done that day and checking it off? How many do that? I do this sometimes. I want to tell you right now, that is the lowest form of time management. It's still a form of time management, so it's better if you don't do that than those that don't. But it's still the lowest form. Because what do? We're usually in quadrant one with all that. What has to be done today? And it's really important for us to feel successful and accomplished. So what we do is we make sure we either check it off or we pour a line through it. We got it done, right? Now, what happens if during the course of the day we find something else that needs to be taken care of? It could pop up as an urgent and important thing. And we want to get sure it's taken care of. So what's the first thing we do? We make sure we write it on that list so that we can cross it off. We want to know we accomplished something that day. We don't want to think we wasted our time. I'm one of those people that does that as part of my daily routine, but I changed quite a while back to do a little bit more planning. Planning is quadrant two, taking time to think what has to be done the course of the week. How can I plot it out? And how can I coordinate? If you spend more time in quadrant two, guess what? You'll wind up spending less time in quadrant one. But I'm telling you, what becomes quadrant two to you is tied into those core values. And you have to sometimes tie it in. And if you can't tie it in, guess what? It's quadrant four. It's not urgent and it's not important. Get rid of it. We all need time here. Now let me ask you something. Do you think going on a vacation is, where would going on a vacation fit? Anybody know? Quadrant two. It's not quadrant four, it's quadrant two. It's rejuvenating. You know, spending time with family and friends. Real quickly, I do those lists, I check them off, but last week I had my son, who doesn't have class right now in the afternoon because the community college is closed, so his afternoon classes are there. He has a habit every time he sees me, hey, Dad, how's your day going? Well, he saw me when he came home from school last week one day, said, hey, Dad, how's your day going? And without hesitation, because sometimes I stop and I think, it's okay, or, you know, it's all right, not too bad, or I haven't got enough done yet, I've been up for a couple hours, and I haven't accomplished much. Some days I'll say, it's really going pretty well. And if I say that, he knows I've probably checked a whole bunch of things off my list. But last week when he asked me, without any hesitation, I said, great. He goes, what have you done? I said, nothing much. I said, I picked up your truck in Hagerstown, and I had a 2.5-hour breakfast with your Uncle Mark. Uncle Mark isn't a real blood relative, but he's my best friend. We've been best friends for almost 40 years. We were roommates in college, and he happens to be my son's godfather. And it was so great, because he and I hadn't had a meal together for 8 months. That's not so unusual for some friends, but he's been retired for 6 months! It was wonderful. That was quadrant two. And it made the rest of my day great, because I felt like I did something that was really tied into my core values. Well, I've given you some stuff to think about and work on there, but what I want to share with you briefly is that our church is taking a courageous mission too. We are courageously trying to move forward to getting a full-time minister. This is the reason I'm here. It's not because of the fact that I look dapper in a three-piece suit, which I think I do. Not as nice as my Superman costume, but it works. I'm here because of stewardship, and I'm here because I really want us to take something personal away from this. But what I really believe is that most of you, if not every one of you here, if you tap into your core values, you'll realize that this congregation, this building, this community that we've created here is a big part of that. It's where you can experience, where you can share, where you can understand things that you really can't necessarily in your workplace. That there probably isn't any other congregation anywhere in Frederick County that comes close to what you can do here, the openness, the acceptance of a world community, the interconnected web of life, the things we believe in. So if that's part of your core values, remember that. We, as a congregation, are taking a bold step and courageously looking for a full-time minister. And in so doing, we're trying to do it in quadrant two. We've tried quadrant one.
All right, we need this. It's urgent. The congregational meetings have told us more than anything else, we want a full-time minister. That's the primary concern that came out. So, I mean, that's wonderful, and I think it's great. We've seen it. We had a full-time minister for a decade. And boy, did we grow. From a teeny little house on Mater Avenue to Rosenstock Hall over at Hood College to now this gorgeous, sunlit, beautiful building on this mountaintop here. We can do it again. And you can envision anything you want. If there's something you've been dissatisfied with, having a leader at the helm makes a difference. Having that consistency. So we're trying to do that. Now, in the upcoming weeks, you're going to get a letter. You're going to get a letter from the minister. You're going to get a letter from the head of the stewardship chair and the finance committee and the board of trustees combined in one. So it's not three different letters. You're going to get a pledge form. You're going to get an invite, an invitation sent to you to a fellowship dinner on Saturday, February 4th at 5:30 p.m. right here with food and music and entertainment. It's going to be wonderful. I ask you this. Please read the papers that come to you. Please read through those and understand. You're going to gain a better understanding of our moving ahead two steps at a time. And please, please, if at all possible, reserve February 4th because we want you here. We want you to share your fellowship with us. So, before I leave, I will leave you with just one more quote by a gentleman, you might remember the name, he passed away in 1966 by the name of James Thurber. As a little kid, I loved reading his cartoons. He's also an author and a bit of a philosopher. So here's the final quote that I leave you with this morning. Do not look backward in anger, nor forward in fear, but look around you in awareness. Thank you.